Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money at Menards.
Steer, racing, rides, people, and places. With your hosts, Brad Banjo, Matt DeAndrea, and Aaron Hagar. New media for a new type of motorsport enthusiast.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's another edition of Shift and Steer. It's Matt and Brad in the studio, and we've got a lot to talk about today. So much, Matt, that we're going to get right into it because we have Alistair Weaver on the phone to tell us all about the big launch of the Model Y yesterday from Tesla. And Alistair is the editor-in-chief of Edmunds.com, and we're lucky to have him on here to tell us because I think he was on the scene.
He wrangled up a last-minute invitation to go over there. I think he made a fuss. Hey, Alistair, what's going on, buddy?
Good, thank you. Yeah, I was there, stateside, 10 feet from Elon himself. It was an extraordinary event. I can remember going to the original Model S launch in Palo Alto about sort of, well, 10 years ago, and then, or 8 years ago, something like that. So to be there yesterday was quite a contrast. It's a They're extraordinary occasions. In some ways, quite low rent. You don't get the razzmatazz that you get from a lot of the more established, older brands. But what you do get is this kind of quasi-religious feeling. It was like being in a cult. I mean, Elon came on and people cheered. You had grown men shouting, "I love you, Elon!" And as somebody who was standing there as an independent member of the media, it was a bit weird at times.
Poor Ian Callum. That never happens to him. We love you, Ian.
Yeah, we love you.
Yeah, that never happens over there. Was the audience mostly, at this point, is it mostly like Tesla bloggers and forums and Tesla owners? Because,
you know, exactly what I was wondering.
Sort of famously, the last like annual report, like conference call they did, you know, he was only like kind of calling on like the Tesla forum guys to ask questions because people were digging to, you know, and then he just yelled at investors on the phone. So I'd like to say we're sort of beyond that attitude, but he keeps tweeting stuff and getting in trouble, so I'm not sure. So the audience was what? Was there like five media guys and then 150 owners?
Pretty much. I mean, as you guys know, at Edmunds, we actually bought a Model S, an X, and own a Model 3, and we've had quite a lot of problems with the Model 3 that's been well documented. And we had to, you know, we had to sort of request access, and eventually they let us in. But they told me on the door there was about 50 to 60 media, and so the several hundred other people were fanboys. So it was all about creating this extraordinary atmosphere. What was strange to me is even when Elon was saying things that were palpably untrue. So, for example, he said it's been 100 years since anybody else attempted mass production. Now, that's just wrong, clearly. You know, think about post-World War II, rise of Honda, rise of the Koreans, rise of Chinese, etc. It's just nonsense. And everybody was, like, cheering, and there was a guy sitting next to me in this Tesla Owners Club jacket who was must have been like pushing 60, but he was beyond excitement, and it was just, I mean, it was kind of weird to behold, and it was, so you build this kind of culty type atmosphere, and when you look at what the even some of the media, I mean, look, I know the comms guys there. We said that we want to come and report it. We'll be, you know, honest and open. Where it's great, we'll say so. Where there's problems, we'll say so. And I think they recognize they need that sort of third-party conversation as well. Mm-hmm. But I give you an example. I was in the Model Y, and we went for a little ride around by the car park. And in the vehicle, we were a bunch of influencers beyond excited about a new Tesla. and I kind of missed the point that the rear third row of rear seats are tiny. So I just took a picture of those and circulated it on Twitter, and that's getting loads of pickup because I seem to be the only person that actually photographed it. So the lack of critical appraisal of what's going on was really marked. And what's interesting for me about the Model Y is the first time Tesla's offering something that isn't truly innovative. What this basically is a Model 3 with a higher roof line. So something like the Golf, or like a Honda Fit is over here. It's that kind of concept, the hatchback.
Right, but you're saying that's just somewhat unconventional for Tesla because they're pretty new, but car companies all the time, they do this all the time. I mean, you know, even I'm driving the Alfa Romeo Stelvio, which is largely based on just the Giulia platform. It's the car and the SUV. It's a good example. That's the best news I've actually heard all day because from a financial standpoint, that seems smart.
Absolutely. From a business perspective, it makes total sense. 75% of the parts are shared with the Model 3. SUV, as we all know, is the dominant force in the market at the moment. So this car will be pretty cheap to engineer, design and engineer. It can be produced alongside the Model 3. So from a business perspective, makes total sense. Interesting, though, for Tesla, it's not, you know, the Model 3 offers something different. The X with its crazy doors, the S at the time was totally different in the market. This is a very conventional business decision, but, you know, if I was a shareholder, I'd be looking at that and saying, thank goodness, some common sense.
Right. This is the most marketable car for them, really, in their lineup. In America, we love the SUVs. The previous one with the Falcon doors is a little wacky and pricey, by the way. And, you know, they need to kind of get into this market. And we're kind of light and loose with the SUV term. This, to me, seems a little more like Jaguar.
A crossover type
it's
of
a little
thing.
More
yeah.
Jaguar I-Pace. I-Pace feels like a Jag XF, but just kind of lifted a little bit, you know?
But it sounds like what you're saying, Alistair, is that this is the first car that came out that didn't come out with some little flair to it, something that had that Tesla, like, this is entirely different. We've retooled the world, you know, and that kind
Tesla
of
for the masses.
The propaganda that they always have. This one is more of like what a car company should be doing.
Yes. It is, if you like, it's almost about Tesla's transition from kind of weird and wacky to sensible car company, which, you know, with my sensible business head on, is probably what they need. I mean, you sit in it, and I had a ride in it. The dashboard is the same as the Model 3. The seats are the same as the Model 3, but they've been raised a little bit because so you'll probably generate more, that'll help generate more space inside. But it's the Model 3 chassis. The wheelbase is the same. They've extended the overhangs a little bit. So it's it's what a management consultant would tell you to build, which isn't very Tesla, but probably is very sensible. So if I was a shareholder, I would think this will be the biggest selling vehicle in their range. And it's interesting you mentioned the I-Pace, as I think you're aware, Matt. Edmunds has bought an S and X and a 3, and we just put an order in for a Y, even though it's a couple of years away. Mm-hmm. And you can soon see the price mount up. You know, so I think we were looking at something like gets to $70,000. And at $70,000, you're right up against Mercedes EQC, Audi e-tron, I-Pace. You know, they are serious cars from big luxury brands. And that becomes a different ballgame for Tesla.
Yeah, it does. And I've got some of the specs and some of the pricing written down here, and I'll go over that in a second because I know we're kind of limited with your time. But in addition to seeing that car, they also rolled out their Roadster and their semi-truck again. And I assume they were saying...
Make a deposit?
Yeah, give us deposits on these so we can go make the SUV.
Well, yeah, the Roadster isn't really a Roadster. It's a coupe. They're extraordinary events to go to. And I had some colleagues, co-workers watching it on the live stream and stuff. And it's something to behold. It's completely out of the ordinary. And I love the fact that Tesla exists. Somebody's come along and shake things up. It's great. And it's a great story. And it always gets lots of attention. And it'll be very interesting to see where they end up in 5-10 years time where everybody else is electrified.
And they're stating that this vehicle, the Model Y, will be available in the fall of 2020. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. So, I mean, I could almost see it ending up replacing the Model 3 in some ways, and I think that there's a big mm-hmm. potential for them to steal sales from themselves with this vehicle. I mean, it's curious that it's so far away because it is literally a totally different body on familiar mechanical. So,
yeah, I think the distance. Yeah. I think why it's far away is because the company has some work to do. You know, they've got to make sure they've got financing in place and they've got distribution in place. And are they opening stores? Are they not opening stores? Are they closing stores? They've got some work to do, sort of behind the scenes. But let me ask you this: so Edmunds is a huge company that reviews cars. Alistair comes on to CarCast with us all the time,
right,
and sheds some light on what's going on. They have better testing than anyone that I've seen. But what's important about them is they don't really take a lot of like long-term loaners from the manufacturers. They buy all the cars and they give sort of this their straight up truth opinion on the testing. Knowing that and what's going on here, does the Model Y excite you? Are you afraid of what it is because of the history and quality of the cars, or does the Model Y make sense to you? Are you on board with this or not? Do you feel like this is the game changer for Tesla?
I think, to be honest, the problems with the Model 3 were they did what software companies do, which is when they throw things at market too early and try and fix it in market and use the early adopters development drivers. My own view of this is, you know, that's okay if it's a phone, and the worst thing is it drops a phone call. You know, when it's a car, and it's such a safety critical piece of kit, I don't think, you know, I think you've got a greater responsibility. The thing with the Model Y is because it is just a Model 3 with a slightly tweaked body, then they will have sort of, and even the Model 3s that we're seeing at the moment still have problems, but are a lot better than our early car. So by the give it another 18 months of development, as long as they don't do anything silly with the Model Y, I think actually you'll end up with a car that's effectively been in production for 3 years and it does pretty well sorted. So I think, you know, if they're not in a better place when they launch this, then they really have got problems. But again, it's a sensible thing to do. Everything's tried and tested here. There's nothing on this car which is radical. And again, it was interesting when you think about a company like Apple, and everybody says, oh, you know, Apple's lost its ability to innovate. It is hard to keep innovating. It's hard to keep shaking things up.
Yeah.
So in essence, the car might have a lot of things sorted out by the time it comes because of the previous Model 3. Big question is, Alistair, have you put a $2,500 deposit down on one yet?
Yes, we have.
Oh, they, yeah.
Okay,
they did,
there
yeah.
you go.
Did you put one on the semi-truck and the Roadster as well?
Yeah.
Because you have to pay for this one.
Yes.
All right, man. I know you got to go to another meeting. Thank you so much for calling in, guys. The website is Edmunds.com. But go to Edmunds.com/roadnoise, and that's where you get all the hard-hitting, like all the quick news and the videos and the recaps and stuff, things like that. So that sounds about right, right? Edmunds.com/roadnoise.
It does. You can see our first look on the Tesla Model Y there, and check out all our Instagram, Twitch accounts, and my end. There's a lot on there about the Model Y from last night. Pleasure to join you guys. Lovely to speak to you as always.
Hey, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it. Good luck today. Have fun.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay.
So you guys can follow Edmunds. They're on Instagram and Twitter, I believe, at Edmunds.com. And then Alistair Weaver, I know this. He's Alistair Weaver on Twitter and Weaver Alistair on Instagram.
Oh, he's sort of like Brad and Bradley, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Now, he did post the photo of the little third row jump seat that they have, because you think of a Model 3 and they're trying to do a three row version of this, and
yeah,
it has two little seats in the back. They're clearly just made for kids. You put a dog there or something, like it's just a little,
it's
addition.
Like the back seat of a Porsche or the back seat
yeah,
of a Mercedes.
It's really meant to be. It's not a full three row, but you know, they can fit it in there because of the electronic, probably the electronic drivetrain. You know,
it's not a full three row. It's a faux three row.
Right, right. But also, when you consider the front trunk and the rest of You can't put your kids in the front.
No, but now you have a higher roof line, and you have the fold down seats, and something the size of a Model 3-ish. It's probably got pretty good space inside. There's probably good
a lot of headroom. I mean, those Model 3s, you see them, and they got this big dome on them.
So
you know?
What we do know about this is, although he kept saying it's based on the Model 3, and it is, I believe the bodywork has a little bit more of an overhang in the back. So I think the overall length is probably a little bit more than the Model 3. But imagine a Model 3 just kind of hit with the air compressor and a puffed up a little bit like a blowfish.
But well, it does have some bulgy fenders that look kind of attractive.
Yeah, I kind of like the lines to it. The front of these cars are still they're growing on me. It's not quite there, but it does have kind of a sleek, kind of fastback kind of look to it, which is interesting. So this is kind of what we know right now, that the top of the range will be a long-range model.
And there's four different versions of it, right?
Yeah, I believe there is. There's the two-wheel drive and the all-wheel drive motors, or basically the dual motor.
But, I mean, they've got to break into ranges. Like, you can get the sport model,
right,
the dual motor model, all those things.
The standard range a model will be, well,
like 150 miles or something?
Yeah, so the way it breaks down is the long-range model is $48,200 base price. That includes the destination charge, and it could top 300 miles. So this is base model long-range, okay? So 300 miles.
No cargo, you weigh 65
right,
pounds.
Right, no seats, no people, no. That's kind of what they're trying to do, like a long-range, not expensive version.
Because
right. Now separately they're going to have a performance version, right? So if you want the fast one, it doesn't mean you get the longest range. You can do long-range, less expensive, which is a good strategy, right? Like, I don't want to spend, let's say somebody doesn't want to spend 65 grand on it. They want to spend 50 grand, 52 grand with a couple options. The base price is 48.2, but they want the range. That's what's important. You can get a kind of stripped-down 300-mile range version,
which that's been used for years in the auto industry, but the opposite way, which was, I want the sport version. I want it to be a little faster, handle a little bit better. Yeah, it gets less mileage. I don't care.
Yeah. So now the dual-motor all-wheel drive version is $52,200, and the performance version is $61,200. Both of those will have about a 280-mile range. The standard model will arrive in the spring of 2021 with about a $40,200 price tag. Now, this is a 230-mile range. So the base is 230 miles, $40,000. Then you can go long range, 300 miles, $48,000. And then you can do the all-wheel driving and do the performance version. And now they say that all the Model Ys will have the third generation supercharging capability, so you can get 75 miles of charge in 5 minutes. Now, keep in mind, that doesn't mean you're going to roll up to your Ralph's and plug in at the public charger there. That doesn't put out enough juice.
Oh, come on. You mean I can't run in and get a sandwich at the deli and come out and I'm boom?
No. You got to have the big charger or whatever at home or at work or wherever. You know, this has been sort of an ongoing discussion we've had in the past.
Now, when will they come out with, like, you know how they have refueling tankers for the Air Force?
Yeah, right?
Why not charging drones?
Charging drones would be fantastic.
Wouldn't that be great? It just comes in, boom, right on the top, and when you're done, you release it, and it flies off, charges the next car.
So Tesla claims the Model Y performance model will do 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds, which seems about right, because I think a base Model 3 does it in 4.8, but like the super fast version, whatever that is like 3.2. So this makes sense. It would fall into that range. Anyway, interesting.
I got a question for you, Matt.
Yeah.
Something that just came to me that I've never thought about with the Teslas before.
Okay.
Can you lease a Tesla?
It's funny that you mentioned that. So I know people that I swear are leasing that. As a matter of fact, I think Adam...
Because everything's about buying them, and they don't have regular traditional dealerships.
No, they don't have their own leasing program. This
so
is
it must
we
be someone who buys them and then releases them or something.
I guess so. I don't know exactly how it works. That's a good question.
It just sprung at me. I thought, everybody's putting a deposit down. They're cash buyers.
I'm pretty sure that Adam Carolla's wife... leased a Model S, and when the lease was up, she traded it and got
Whoever listening to this now knows her because they listened to her last week.
Yeah, because they listened to her last week, yeah.
Sorry about that, guys.
And so, and I don't know if that was through like a third-party leasing program or not.
It's interesting. It's one of those things that you just never thought of.
In the collector car world, we have, what's the name?
Putnam, whatever. Yeah.
So Putnam will like go to an auction. Like they'll have a booth or something at an auction. You can call them ahead of time and go, hey, I want to buy this classic car. Or I want to go to Barrett Jackson, get something. They would technically purchase it and do a lease to you.
Right.
You know, so maybe there's a third-party leasing
program. They wouldn't do one to me because I would never do that.
No, I wouldn't do that either.
I haven't leased a car, a personal car in my entire life. Business, another thing, but.
If you did, it would be sad because your car is a decade and a half old.
Which, let me talk about my car.
That would be a very long lease.
Let me tell you a funny story about what happened to me on the way to work yesterday.
Okay.
Are we done with the Tesla?
We're done with the Tesla. You talk about that, and then I got a couple notes on mid-engine Corvette. So,
okay. And
we're going to rush. Take your time.
And we're also going to talk about, I'm going to tell you all about the XT5 Cadillac that I've been driving.
Okay.
So, anyways, I'm on my way to work yesterday.
Congratulations.
It was windy as hell here in Southern California. We're having Santa Ana winds, gusts to 70 miles an hour. And I'm driving up the 55 freeway. And if you've ever been in that kind of conditions and you come up alongside a semi, there's a weird buffeting,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So right as I pull along this semi truck, I see a shadow and I hear this big smack, like something hit my car, and I like literally ducked. I didn't know what was going on, and I looked in my rearview mirror, and I saw something flying through the air, and I was like, man, something must have fallen off that semi-truck, hit my car.
Oh, yeah.
And then I realized I had a big hole in my roof. A big hole in my roof.
Really?
Like,
wait, what were you
31 and a half inches. I was driving my Yukon.
Yeah.
31 and a half inches by 17 and a half inches.
That's called a panoramic roof.
That is called a sunroof.
Yeah.
The air had gotten weird, and it sucked my sunroof literally off my car. The frame and everything's there, but where the panel of glass is glued,
yeah,
it sucked it off the car and threw it through the air like 100 feet, and it shattered in the. Thankfully, it didn't hit any cars. I watched it.
Yeah.
It landed in the carpool lane and just shattered. So I'm like going, all the years I've been, you know, I've had sunroofs in a lot of my cars and never had any problem. And I was like, this is odd. This is the strangest thing. So I come to the office and I start Googling, and there's a lawsuit going on right now in California that they just approved to go on. Now, this is specific to Volkswagen.
Yeah.
Saying that the same thing. People were driving down the road and their sunroof shot off and burst into, and it was something with the glues and like that.
Yeah.
And so then I'm like, oh, wow. So then I go, I got to find a sunroof repair place because I got a big hole, right?
Yeah.
And
luckily the rain stopped.
Exactly.
You don't have to fix that till next year.
You're right. I can just go around. Hey,
fine.
My sunroof's open. But I start calling some, the first place I call, I go, hi, I've got a Yukon XL, and I had the weirdest thing happen. And she goes, oh, that could be eligible for a recall. And I go, what? And I go, well, no, it's not a new car. I said, it's a little bit older. It's my work truck.
It's a little bit older.
And I go, it's 2001. And she goes, it could be eligible for a recall. I go, really?
Yeah.
And she, you know, she goes, what serial number? So I get out all the stuff because I've owned it since it was new. And she goes, that's a really good sunroof. That's, you know, that's standard equipment on a Bentley. And I go, wow, okay, great. It still came off.
Somewhere on a Bentley, their sunroof's popping up and flying down the road.
So anyways, long story short, it was not part of the recall because that was for newer cars. However, the company's been really cool. I'm not going to mention who they are yet, but the guy, I called the representative of the company. He goes, listen, it is older, but we have had some issues with them over the years. We're going to give you new glass, new tracks. All you got to do is pay for the labor to have it installed. I'm like going, a 20-year-old car and you're going to replace it?
Not bad.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So
if all that happens for real, then
I'll mention them. Yeah, I'll plug them. So next week I'm going to go out and they're going to measure it. They're going to ship them the glass and everything and then get it all installed. Now, I don't know. Maybe the place and go, yeah, it's $5,000 to have that installed.
Yeah.
You know, we got to drop your headliner. We got to remove all the seats. You know,
right. We got to cut the roof off. We got to weld in new panels.
But no, everybody was really cool about it. But I, all the years I've been around cars, yeah, I've never heard of this happening. Then when it happens to me, I go on Google and it's like, oh, there's a lawsuit and this is happening. And the sunroof company's like, oh, yeah. So it was
scary.
Weird. Dude,
that's the thing. When they send you the new part, you got to sign the waiver. No suing them.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was the very first thing when I called. Did it hit anyone's car, and was there anyone injured or damaged? And I go,
just that one guy lost his head. Literally,
the guy on the motorcycle. Yeah, but you know,
he didn't feel a thing.
Yeah, I was watching it because that thing sailed 100 feet in the air, and I'm watching it come down. I'm going, because it's, you know, it's drive time. Luckily, it went into the carpool lane and just shattered in a million pieces. You know, but it was like, I was like,
you kept driving. You're like, that's not me. I don't know who that is.
Well, I
some
said,
asshole lost his
what am I going to do? Go back? I mean, it's
sweep,
you know,
it up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but it was like, I was thinking that thing, if it came down on, well, worst thing, it'd be a motorcycle. But just, can you imagine you just driving along and all of a sudden this giant piece of glass falls on your car? I mean,
just shatters on your hood, scares out of everybody, swerve, crash.
Jeez, but that's the problem. I mean, you know, you hear about people like, I knew a guy who a semi truck wheel came off coming the other direction, and it hit that center, and it came flying over the center median. He was in a convertible. He goes, I'm driving along, and it never hit him. It hit the you know, the upright post.
Yeah,
he was lucky, because if it would have hit the windshield, probably would have taken him out. It hit right there and flattened it, shattered everything, and the whole top just disappeared. He goes, I'm driving along, and 1 minute all of a sudden air's coming at me and my top's gone, man. And he goes, everybody thought I was dead for sure. You
wow.
know? And he goes, I got pulled over. And
so he wasn't an SL, wasn't a convertible hardtop.
Actually, I hate to even say what he was driving. He was driving a VW Rabbit.
Oh.
I told him if he didn't have a girl's car, maybe.
I was just going to say, where was he going? To a sorority meeting?
Exactly. So anyways, I just thought that was just amazing. So if anybody else is having sunroof
What were you doing driving your SUV anyway? I thought you had the Cadillac.
They picked up the Cadillac.
Yeah.
And dropped off a brand new 2019 Honda Accord.
Oh.
Which, have you driven one of those yet?
No.
I'm quite impressed so far. I every Honda I've ever driven has been like a rental car or a 1977 that my sister had, you know?
Yeah.
And man, have they upped their game. The 2019 Accord is good looking too,
which is interesting because I did just drive the Acura ILX, and next week I've got a vehicle that you drove. I've got the big SUV, the MDX.
Acura. Oh yeah, that's a great car, great SUV.
Because Corolla's on this SUV thing, and he wants one now, and he knows what size he wants, and what's like a, you know, Ford Explorer MDX size, 196, 197 inches. Not Navigator size, but not too small, right?
Right.
So he's got sort of a certain size in mind, and so we're looking
at it.
Well,
he'll probably like it because it's got a great interior, good acceleration. The stereo system is incredible in it.
Now, you've only been in the Accord like a day or two.
Half a day. Yeah.
Have you driven it around?
I drove it home last night. I drove it over to the Wheel Factory, and it's unbelievably quick considering it's a four-cylinder with a turbo.
Now, this is the same four-cylinder that they use in, like, the Civic Type R, and it's working its way down to a bunch of other, like, different variations. Like, the ILX, I think, had it not 300-something horsepower. It had, like, a 280-something horsepower version of it.
Right.
But it seems to be a pretty good engine.
It's,
also,
it's
what
gross.
I like about it is if you can modify one, you can modify them
that's
all.
That's right. But, I mean, you know, look out the studio window here, and, I mean, it's a good-looking car.
Yeah, it is a good-looking car.
It's
not small.
No, it's not small at all, and the interior is very spacious, and it has a real nice interior. So far, I like the, you know, the Apple CarPlay you know, integration and like that. And so, you know, we'll talk about that, but I got another car I want to tell you about today. But first, let's talk about cars that are so fast that the windows are popping.
Yeah. Let's do that. I'm going to tell you about this.
But before I do that, I want to tell you about something else, Matt.
Okay.
You know what that is, don't you?
I'm going to guess...
It's about jeans.
Jeans?
It's about jeans.
Jeans.
Because everybody has a favorite pair of jeans. The pair that fits perfectly and always looks great. The pair you wear out at night, at home on the couch, at work, wherever. They're the two, do not underestimate their importance. No one knows this better than Wrangler, the authority on jeans, using their expertise in comfort and durability. Wrangler jeans are made for the adventurers, the go-getters, folks who like to keep moving, whether you ride a bike, a bronc, or a skateboard. Or if you're the type who walks the earth in search of something, these are the jeans for you. Classic or modern styles, a range that fits at a price that works for you. Vintage re-releases. Wrangler has something for everyone. Visit Wrangler.com and check out their great selection of jeans, shirts, pants, outerwear for men and women. New styles, great fits. Wrangler, real comfortable jeans.
Like it. So we're talking about, I want to talk a little bit about the mid-engine Corvette, the C8 Corvette that's coming out pretty soon. And lots of testing and stuff happening on that. And I'm not trying to pick on the car. Everything goes through, you know, it's got to work out its bugs. It's not on the road yet.
But before you get into that, I mean, yeah. I've heard over the years of cars that are, you know, there used to be a term that we'd throw around. I'm going to blow your doors off, you know?
Yeah.
So now it's like these are blowing their windows off, right?
Yeah. So the most recently, this just happened as we're recording. This is literally happening hours ago. They've been testing it.
And that was not the shattered glass on the freeway.
No, this is the mid-engine Corvette. They were testing it, all camouflaged up, pulled into a gas station, filled it up, couldn't get it started, and fussed around with it for about a half an hour and had to get the tow truck. They had to cover it and get the tow truck. It's a little embarrassing, but that's what you do. It's all
That's why it's in mule version.
Yeah, and to be fair, the tow truck was a Chevy as well, so at least it's on brand.
Because that would have been an ad if Ford had to come pull. You know, they would have.
Yeah, they towed it with a car cover on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if we're allowed to do that here.
Oh, you mean flat towed it?
Yeah, no, it's towed on the back of a truck. It's not a flatbed.
Oh, yeah.
Like they dragged it backwards.
Yeah, that's...
That's all they can get access to. I got GMC tow truck, though. So the C8, it's rumored to have a few electrical issues, which is no big deal. They'll work it out. They're getting it done. But they're testing, like, a V8 version of the car and then potentially a higher horsepower, maybe twin-turbo V8 version of the car. And who knows what that horsepower is going to be. It could be pushing somewhere up to around the 1,000-horsepower mark. I don't know if that's just for bragging rights, but if you think of where we are with a ZR1,
we're at with all supercars, and they've got to be competitive.
Yeah. I mean, we got a Demon with 840 horsepower. Yeah. We got a new Shelby GT500 with 700-plus horsepower. I mean, it's going to be north of 700. It's probably going to be somewhere in the 700 to 800, 900 horsepower.
Yeah, America's sports car can't have less horsepower than one of those sedans.
So the issue now is it sounds like the chassis is having issues handling that amount of power, and it's twisting, and the rear glass is reportedly breaking. They've been shattering glass, which is some twist, which is interesting because a while back I drove the McLaren 720S. And
right.
The 720S has... It has a door frame, and in the door, on the side of the door, has like a little bit of a glass thing going on.
Yeah.
So you can kind of see through it.
You can kind of see. Yeah, it gives you more visibility.
And above it, like up on top. So it's cut kind of like a kind of a squarish kind of frame to it with a piece of glass in the middle. And on that 720S, both of those glass pieces were cracking the same way. And since then, McLaren has fixed it. But yeah, I drove a pre-production version, but apparently some cars made it out there and it was kind of breaking because of the amount of twist and stuff. And they ended up saying it had to do with, I don't know, the type of glue or something used with... They used the sunroof glue, yeah. It didn't pop off and fly away.
Right.
Maybe the glue was too good.
Yeah.
Maybe it needed a little more flex to it. And you know, my thought was just like, well, just pop that glass out, use some carbon fiber panel in there, and it'll look badass. And who cares about the sun coming in? Although it was nice because you didn't feel as claustrophobic. But yeah, so they had kind of an issue as well. I don't know if it was quite had to do with the torque of the car. I think it just had to do with the hinges on that door and the way it does twist up a little bit. So Corvette's kind of potentially having that issue. The electrical issue seems like an easier thing to fix. The chassis, I don't know if that means going back to the drawing board or do you do a lot of extra bracing, which is not out of the question. Just think of most cars today. You buy the coupe version, and you get the convertible version of it, and you look underneath it, and you're like, oh, there's some extra bracing and stuff going on with the convertible version. Anything from a Mustang to whatever.
Sure, there always has been, yes.
Yeah, and there's always been, like, a lot of talk, even when something like a McLaren or a Ferrari comes out, that there was the coupe version, and then there's the Roadster.
The Spider or whatever weighs more because it's got...
So now they talk about, even like an Aventador, I think when that Roadster came out, they said... It only adds a couple of extra pounds because the initial chassis was so strong. We didn't need to brace it up additionally for the Roadster. They did like an X brace over the engine. So there's always a little bit of that. So it sounds like they need to do that on the high horsepower version, not necessarily a convertible version. But I'm sure they're going to have to do it on a convertible version as well. But anyway, they got a little bit of work to do.
What's interesting about that, and you brought up the horsepower, is that this car's been in development for a long time.
It seems like it,
yeah. And it makes you wonder if they, you know, okay, we're going to come out with a 600-horsepower version, and everything was spec'd for that. And then as all these cars start coming out with, like you said, 700-horsepower and things, they went, oh, we've got to up our game. But everything that had been developed prior to that, I mean, that's just speculation.
So that's exactly is car companies are trying to speed up the development time so they can see what's on the market more. The new Ford GT, the supercar, for example, that, you know, that whole secret build in the basement, you know, whatever, like there was so much CAD testing and computer development that was the way they can develop that car in like 18 months. Of course, it's a specialty car and they can get away with stuff like that. But there was something else. I think
but it was so even much our... of that right there, you hit it. You know, like what we use all CAD development in my wheel company. And the wheel industry, back at Boyd's, we used to build a wheel, the first prototype, and we would send it out to testing labs for structural testing, you know, radial and lateral testing. And nowadays, you can do so much of that in the tube.
In the software.
Yeah, it's right in the side. It'll say, oh, this is a weak point, and it'll come up a certain color, and you've got to, you know, do all that. And they do the same thing in the automotive industry now.
And you're certainly right. When they put pen to paper, if you will, if they started firing this thing up on the computer and developing the chassis and stuff, there was probably lots of computer testing going, you know, 750, 800 pound-feet of torque, we can do it. It's all good. It's certain meeting our levels. But now if they're testing a high horsepower version of 1,000 horsepower, or I don't know what the torque is, maybe that's the torque. Who knows what they're going on with it. I would imagine they also need to test and say, all right, we're going to have a 700 horsepower version of this car, but people will modify it. The Ken Lingenfelders of the world will make 1,000 horsepower.
So what's going to happen,
you know, what's
when
gonna
it
happen?
Does that?
When he does it, he's going to shatter the windshield, you know, the rear glass. Like,
damn, Ken.
Like, what's going to happen? And, you know, and guys like Ken will figure it out and fix it. You'll buy a supercharger kit that comes with a roll cage to stiffen that thing up.
Exactly, yeah.
It's all made out of carbon fiber, and it costs $82,000.
Or maybe it just comes with a piece of plywood that's cut the size of the rear window.
There you go. There we go. Yeah, that'd be good. Or the window is smaller by 4 inches and has a big rubber gasket like a kicker subwoofer, you know, so it just bounces in the back.
There you go, yeah.
So it could do that. But anyway, that's lots of development stuff, you know, happening on the Corvette. And with all the camouflage spy photos of it, people have done some renderings of what they think it's going to look like without the camo on it. It looks good.
It looks good, but you do hear the Corvette, you know, the guys who have always been Corvette guys that are going, oh, it looks too much like a supercar. It doesn't look like a Corvette. It is a supercar.
Yeah, it is a supercar.
They're trying to make it a supercar.
And there's speculation on price. It could start at 70 grand and work its way up to 100 plus. And it was never really clear to me that this was replacing the Corvette. It's sounding like it is, like this is the next Corvette. But I always thought there is a little bit of room to keep a front-engine Corvette, keep a $60,000 to $100,000 front-engine Corvette, and do $100,000 to $130,000, $140,000 mid-engine Corvette. Like, why not have two in the lineup?
It's just, I think in today's world of the...
They don't sell enough.
They don't have enough... somebody's sunroof just popped up.
So I heard that in the background.
The dealer networks, everything, they just don't have the... you know, the bandwidth to do that anymore. But, you know, it's something to consider. But, you know, hey, over the weekend, we can hit really quickly. we went to that big bash at the Peterson Museum.
Oh, yeah, there was an event there.
There was. It was a bunch of people got together for a car show, a film premiere, and a podcast. You and Adam were throwing a bash to celebrate 10 years.
10 years. 10 years of CarCast.
A decade.
10 years of Adam Carolla show. And it was good. Like, we've done screenings before. We've done live podcasts before, but we've never done any type of car show before. And it was a lot of fun to do. There was over 800 people showed up throughout the day. Something about 70 people just showed up the day of, just bought a ticket and walked in. And it was fun. I mean, it was good. Like we said, we loved the great mix of cars. I think that was kind of cool to see. We handed out some awards, Best in Show and People's Choice Award, my pick and Adam's pick. And
what'd you pick?
I picked this.
Other than your nose.
Right. I picked this Datsun 510 drift car.
Oh, really?
It had a little V8 with velocity stacks on it.
Oh, cool.
And just a ton of angle in the steer.
I didn't even see
and,
that.
Yeah. It was badass. Like, it was cool just the amount of work these guys put into it. And there's not a lot of, we talked to the drifters that we know, like the Vaughn Gittin Jr. and Justin Pollock and running Roush Mustangs and guys like that. And,
yeah.
And they've kind of like have parts developed to get that real steering angle and stuff. I don't know who develops them for the 510. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it was pretty cool. And they had like the radiator moved to the back, like in the trunk of it, so they can get a little bit more of a balance on the car.
Right.
And,
right.
Just a lot of work put into it. And it's cool. And they had it there with like giant velocity stacks, like 8-inch or 12-inch velocity stacks. Now when they run it, they have like a air box.
Right.
That goes on.
That was just their show stacks.
And those were the show stacks, which looked fantastic. Adam picked some wagon. I thought
that was horrible that Adam picked his own Porsche. I mean, that
he
was
did not. No, I we told him up on stage, we're like, you can't pick your own car. And he's like, oh, and then I got to redo my notes. Hold on. A wagon with a Subaru engine in the back. The People's Choice Award was an orange Chevy Blazer, I think 1970 Blazer.
Really?
Really done nice. That was People's Choice.
Out of all those cars there, it was a Chevy Blazer.
And our Best in Show, our pick was this red Porsche 911, just really done nicely. But one that didn't win an award, but we did film with and talked about, is a guy had a 69 911 converted to electric.
Really?
It was full electric,
wow.
And it was beautiful. It was silver, red leather interior. Did a nice job. Completely stock-looking body. It runs a single motor in the back hooked up to the drivetrain of the Porsche, so you still shift gears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you said you can put it pretty much in second gear and kind of just drive it that way.
Yeah.
But it does, and you look at it, you go underneath, and it's just a giant electric motor.
Wow.
Looks like an RC car, but you think of your round sort of electric motor and there's the little shaft that comes out.
Yeah.
That's facing the front of the car. The shaft is pointing toward the front of the car.
Okay.
So the motor is kind of in like lengthwise of the car and it hooks right up to the transmission.
So when you open up the back, what do you look at?
I went underneath it. There's not much to see from the back. I went underneath and you can see it attached there. And in the front of the car, there's a battery, and I think he said it's basically one third of a Tesla battery is what they picked apart to do it.
Hmm.
And he said, it wasn't super quick, but a lot quicker than it was stock because the car was slow then. And I think he said he added about 200 pounds overall to the car, but it's quicker and under its current configuration with that battery.
Current, I get it.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
I'm punny. he gets about 100-mile range.
So it's a 911E.
Actually, it was a 912. I correct.
So it's a 912E.
It's a 912E.
That's
did you just say
912E? 912E.
912E? Yeah, it was nice. It was nicely done.
Cool.
So it was a good group of cars. And
that's what I mean. There's
well.
A really great group. And then I got to say, I'd never seen Uppity, the film.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about here, I had met him so many years ago, back in the 80s.
Willie.
When he was
Willie
T. Ribbs. I said him. I should have said his name. Willie T. Ribbs, who's the film is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But I met him when he was racing for Roush.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in Phoenix, and I was doing automotive photography at the racetrack.
Okay.
And met him and saw the cars and took pictures of him racing and stuff. So just to see the whole – because I had this one little glimpse of him, you know, of, oh, wow, he was really fast. He was a really cool guy. And
full energy and dancing on the hood.
Yeah,
the
you know, I thought, wow, didn't know any of the backstory, you know. So seeing that and the way it was put together was fantabulous. I mean, you like that's a brand new word
yeah,
I came up with.
I like it.
But, you know, Billy F. Gibbons,
yes,
my buddy, he came with me to the show and he was sitting there and he leaned over a couple times and he goes, this is really a good film. It's really a good film. And he always carries a notebook with him.
I know.
And he always carries a notebook so that if he has music lyric ideas or something like that, and he kept pulling it out, making notes all through the film, and then he'd put it away, and then he'd pull it out again. I go, what are you doing? He goes, ideas for the future.
Oh, so, he's going to write a Willie T song.
Yeah, you know.
Willie T, which is great. We all went afterwards. We had like a little green room set up in between the car show and the movie, and then you guys were up there. Billy was up there. Said hi to everybody. Then you guys went down and watched the movie. And I don't know, one of the security people from the Peterson walked in and said, who's that ZZ Top looking guy? And I was like, beats me. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It could have been the ZZ Top looking guy. Like, where do you think we are here? Which is great. So I'm glad you liked the film.
Yeah, it was very good.
Adam and Nate put a lot into it. And Willie T is so excited about it. And hopefully that turns into a show on Showtime. A scripted series, and we'll see how that goes. And
well, if Dish Satellite would ever get HBO and Showtime back, I'd be able to see it.
Don't even get me started on the on those companies. That's it's not car related, but I was watching TV the other day, and I lost a few of my channels, like I don't know, like Cinemax and Epix or something. Cause I like the movie package. I don't really care for the sports. So I get an online chat. I was like, some of my channels are missing. They're like, Cinemax doesn't let us bundle it anymore. Now it's a la carte. And I said, okay, so you took the channels away. They're like, yeah. I said, you didn't change my bill.
Exactly.
They're like,
same with me.
They're like, no, you have the package, which includes all. I was like, yeah, but you just removed two of my channels, the only two that I wanted, and my bill is still the same. They're like, yeah, well, you can get those for $9.99 a la carte. I was like, all right, so I got to pay extra for it? I was like, no. I'm not doing that.
On Dish, you got me now. They got rid of HBO and Showtime because of negotiations or whatever they did. And so now you go to the station, it just says, HBO is no longer on Dish because they didn't like us or whatever. You know, it's something real snide.
Yeah.
And I called them up, same thing. And they go, oh, well, we issued you a $1.75 credit on your bill. Well, wait a minute.
Yeah, I've been paying so much for months for HBO. You take it away and you don't keep the money?
This, it's ridiculous.
Anyway, but so I got some calls to make.
That's a whole other thing. But, hey, what I want to talk about is this vehicle that you brought up that I've been driving, which is the Cadillac XT5 all-wheel drive. Now, this is a crossover. This is one of Cadillac's crossovers. It they gave me the Platinum Edition to drive, which is the top of the line. It's fully loaded. It has all the great stuff. Now, this vehicle ranges in price. It starts at like $41,695.
Oh,
mine
good.
Was optioned out to the hilt, so it was around $66,000 and some change. But it's definitely, you know, you look at it from the outside, you look at it at the front, and it's definitely a Cadillac. It has that real angular design that they're known for that's kind of become the Cadillac brand. But it's not as big as the Escalade. You know,
right.
It's much smaller. But what was surprising to me is that inside, it had plenty of room. It's a lot smaller vehicle, but even the cargo area, you know, it was really useful, really good space. One thing that I didn't like was it had an option that was $700 that was some cargo adjustment thing, which is some aluminum tracks with these little, you know.
Like dividers?
Like little bars to hold your cargo in place.
Okay, yeah.
Great idea, but not simple to work, okay? And I'm thinking, I'm a mechanically inclined guy.
Not $700.
Yeah, it should just, you know, be real easy. The buttons didn't work that well, and I loved the idea, and I took some pictures of, like, I went and got pool chemicals for my pool, and I liked the way I knew that those chlorine boxes weren't going to tip over. They weren't going to, you know, they were held in place. I had some camera equipment. There was, like, a cargo net you could fold out and pull down and latch. All that was great. It even came with a Cadillac-branded, you know, like rubber mat in the back, you know, with the sides on it. That was great because I took George up to the canyon for a walk. When he was done, put him in there, cleaned his feet off, gave him his water, and so all of that worked great.
George is your neighbor?
George is my neighbor. He's getting old.
He's getting old.
George the dog.
You got to give him water.
And but as far as those dividers, moving them and stuff like that, and then the other thing was, when you didn't want them there, where do you put them? You know, it was it was kind of like there should have been a little bit more of that for $700 option, I thought, you know.
Right.
Now, which engine
did it have? Did it have, like, the turbo 2-liter or did it have the 6-liter?
No, it's got the 3.6-liter V6.
Okay.
It puts out 310 horsepower. Mm-hmm. And that, I do have some figures on that.
Is it naturally aspirated?
Yeah, naturally aspirated.
Okay.
And it'll do 0 to 60 in 6.6 seconds.
Okay.
So it's not blistering fast.
Yeah, that feels fast.
But for a crossover, it's pretty good. The one thing, though, is the steering took a little bit. Well, all these new cars, if you're driving a normal car, you know, mm-hmm. an older car, and then you jump in like this car, the steering is so responsive, it almost has a feel of twitchiness to it.
Yeah.
Till you get used to it. But once you got used to it, it was good. But that 3.6 liter, it was great. Merging on in traffic, it had plenty of power. You know, it's no CTSV, mm-hmm. but you don't expect it to be a CTSV. But it still had 20-inch wheels. It had great-sized tires. Now, for me, I would have liked to have sat down a little bit lower. You know, it had a lot of room from the top, but that's one of those things. That's how they get the ride and the comfort out of it
right.
and all that. It great interior. One of the things I really appreciated was so many cars have that, like, burl wood or something mm-hmm. like that. This had, like, a metallic carbon fiber. It wasn't carbon. It was like a metallic carbon fiber.
Okay.
And it was really attractive against the black interior. And then, you know, we've had really crappy weather around here.
Yeah, yeah.
And the heated steering wheel and the heated seats.
I used that the other day, too.
Oh, man. It's so nice on a cold day.
I wasn't embarrassed at all.
Not at all. I use it anytime it's below 70.
Yeah, yeah. So, I got it in this morning. I was like, I think I'm going to use the heated seats.
I know. It's so nice. And the heated seats. And then, of course, this one has the air-conditioned seats for in the, you know, the other times of year. But I would say overall, it's nice. Now, if you're comparing it to, like, the Porsche Macan S or something like that, you're not going to get the performance of that. But if you're comparing it to, like, maybe the Lexus, you know, of a comparable, like the RX 350 or something, I think it's got much more than that vehicle does.
Is there a smaller Cadillac SUV, or is this?
Yes, there is. There's the XT4,
okay,
which is just a little bit smaller.
Right.
And but overall, I mean, this thing had all-wheel drive, mm-hmm. great leather interior. Again, really good, solid integration on the, you know, you bring your phone in and, man, it's ready to go. It talks to that Apple CarPlay and you get, you know, whatever you want to listen to on your phone, your phone book's in there. You just voice recognition, everything like that. And you know, it was really a nice car. Cadillac, you know, I'm a fan of Cadillac. I've been, you know, everyone that I've driven, I've liked, even that, you know, CT6, the hybrid.
Yeah.
You know, not the kind of car I'd go out and buy, but driving it was a pleasure. And, you know, I picked up Billy to come to the CarCast event in it. And, you know, Billy's a huge fan. He's got several Cadillacs. And, of course, he owns the quintessential Cadillac of all time in customs, Cadzilla. And he got it and he goes, what kind of car is this? And because what's amazing, unusual for most cars nowadays, if you sit in the passenger seat, I wouldn't have noticed it without Billy getting in the car.
Oh, no branding.
There's no branding in front of you. It's on the steering wheel. And then it's very subtle on the seats. But if you're looking in front, it's not Cadillac script or anything. So he goes, what kind of car is this? And I go, it's a Cadillac. And he goes, I thought so. When I came down the stairs out of my house, I saw those headlights. But, you know, and he goes, this is nice. This is nice. And, you know, he loves Cadillacs.
Okay, so let me ask you this before we wrap up, because we've been driving SUVs recently. You've gone through a few. I'll tell you guys next week about the Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quattrofoglio that I'm driving.
Easy for you to say.
Right? I'm glad I got that right. Do you like that Cadillac or the Acura that you drove? Those, because those were pretty recent for you.
I would say if you pushed me in a corner and I had to make a choice, that Acura has a few bits and pieces that I liked a little bit more than the Cadillac.
The last Cadillac I drove, and then getting into something like, I mentioned this on the Genesis as well, was I like the style of the Cadillac, but it's feeling like a little, the interior is getting a little long in the tooth.
It
doesn't feel like it's quite up there with some of the German cars as far as quality of interior, especially now when you look at even what Lincoln is doing.
Yes.
And that's been sort of the weak point for me. And so getting into something that's kind of fresh, like the Genesis, that made me say I would take the Genesis over the CTS, you know, potentially. I just thought it was a little bit nicer. So I was wondering, compared to something like the Acura, because the Acura is the luxury brand of Honda, but not priced out of range. It's not Mercedes priced.
Exactly.
It's Cadillac.
The Cadillac is, you know, and that Cadillac's starting to get to the high end, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, now, like I said, I had the Platinum, which is the very top of the line. It has everything. I mean, with the Platinum, you get things, Matt, like the 20-inch wheels.
Yeah.
You get the, you know, the heads-up lighting package, the heads-up display, and like a hands-free tailgate, which I got to say, I never thought, oh, who needs a hands-free tailgate? I had my hands full. I had a bunch of stuff, and I was like, oh, this is cool. You just, you know, and everything opens and everything closes.
And another feature that's out there, because my mom is thinking about an SUV, is I told her, well, we need to find one that has the hands-free tailgate and the power, but also when it opens, you can set the height as to which how high you want it to open, so she can push the button to close it, you know, so you can bring it down a little bit, or in her garage.
I was just going to say, you know, it's in the garage.
If it goes too high up, it could hit the garage door, so I want to get that right so you can adjust that on some of those. But look, you said it's about 65,000 with all the bits and pieces, 60-something thousand.
Mm-hmm.
The Alfa Romeo that I'm driving, now it's the Quattrofoglio, it's the fast version, it's got the big Brembos and all that. 85,000 though.
Yeah.
You know, 85,000 for the hot version of it. So I don't know. We'll see.
So you're going to tell us about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just got the Honda Accord. And
next week.
And so we'll be talking about that over the next couple of weeks, showing some photos and putting those up on the website. So just keep tuning in, because we're going to have a bunch more. But you know what you're going to need when you're driving those cars, Matt?
Ooh, insurance?
You're going to need some insurance, buddy. And, okay, this is a 30-second commercial, and I'm going to throw a lot of numbers at you. But please, stay with me, okay?
All right, I'm listening.
In just 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. This company has been offering great rates and great service for over 75 years. And at any time you need help, you can speak to one of their trained specialists 24/7. The company is GEICO. Go to geico.com today. Sorry for all the numbers. And in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, I'm out of here.
That's it. You're done.
Done. So, hey, everybody, you know, sorry about the technical flub on last week's show. Please, if you did download it and got Lynette Corolla's show about kids, go back. We corrected that mistake, and it is up now with Heather Storm as my special guest host, and we're talking about the best cars that were at the Geneva Motor Show. We are talking about, you know, what she does on Garage Squad and all kinds of stuff. So go listen there, and as always, Matt, where can they find us online?
Check us out at shiftandsteer.com, and all of our social media is shiftsteermedia.
And you can find me at Bradley_Fanshawe on Instagram, where I post most of my stuff. But you can also find me on Facebook and Twitter at Brad Fanshawe. So go check that out.
You can find me at Motorator on all social media. And thanks to our buddy Alistair Weaver for calling in. Check him out at edmunds.com/roadnoise.
And thanks to Adam Carolla and all the crew who put on a great bash at the Peterson and had the foresight to invite myself and my Man Seeks Adventure co-hosts. So thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week. Shift and Steer. Out of here.
If you like this show, also listen to Man Seeks Adventure and Dixon's Wild Ride. You can find Man Seeks Adventure at manseeksadventure.com.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now. Save big money.